relocating to Maine during a pandemic. For years now, organizations throughout the state have worked to attract more people to move to Maine, and the state's population has grown gradually. But now it appears that the COVID-19 pandemic may be accelerating those efforts. A couple of things are going on. There is the national phenomenon of urban flight. As more people can work remotely, people in urban areas are asking themselves, why do I live here? Others, who already have connections to Maine, are coming back home because of financial pressures, such as job loss, to live with family. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we discuss a new survey of people working in Maine during the pandemic, what this might mean for Maine's future, and what benefits and challenges come with this trend. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. For Maine Public Radio, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Maine has long held an attraction to people looking for quality of life. Now, with many working from home during the pandemic, more people are finding ways to stay here and do their work remotely. We'll discuss the reasons people are choosing to live and work in Maine and whether this trend will continue and whether it will benefit the state. Joining me, Nate Wilds, who is executive producer of the organization Live and Work in Maine. Luke Thomas, the founder of Friday, a company focused on connecting remote workers. And Andrew Butcher, director of innovation and resilience with the Greater Portland Council of Governments. He is also with the Maine Broadband Coalition. And as always, we want to hear from you. Are you living in Maine and working from home? Do you find it easy or hard to do? Have you noticed an influx of people from other states moving to your neighborhood? You can send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. 1-800-399-3566. Nate, your organization, Live and Work in Maine, has been focused on drawing people to come here for work as a way to revitalize Maine. It seems as though there is a surge happening now. Is that anecdotal or is that something we're able to measure? What are you seeing?
Yeah, it's both. So I think anecdotally, if you talk to anybody who lives full time in Maine, they will say, man, it seems like all the rental properties around me are full and cars are in the driveway and there are outer state plates in the driveway. And certainly that's something everyone seems to be hearing anecdotally. The facts are that, yes, what we hear from realtors, especially in southern Maine, but broadly all over the state, is that all the rental properties, or the majority of the rental properties that normally would be rented for short-term rentals, if they're capable of being lived in for a longer period of time, they have been rented for a longer period of time, which is to say people are coming to Maine not for a week, but they're coming to Maine for months or even for the foreseeable future. And they're snapping up whatever property is possible just to get them here. And these are oftentimes folks that, you know, and frankly, this happened early on in COVID, so this is not an ongoing trend because for all intents and purposes, most of the rental properties in Maine are full. There's not a lot of space outside of hotels right now. And so the facts are, from a real estate perspective, yeah, it seems like people are coming from out of state and they're staying here. And what we're seeing, again, on the fact side, through some survey work that we've done over the last few weeks focused on remote work, what we're hearing from folks is that, yes, in fact, they are remote working in Maine. They don't yet consider themselves a full-time Mainer, but they are more than open to and willing to consider themselves a full-time Mainer when COVID is over. So essentially, Maine is selling itself by providing these folks with a great quality of life while they're seeking refuge in our great state.
Sure. Talk about that survey. I understand about 450 people responded. Not scientific, but that's a pretty big number. What did you learn? Who are the people who are staying? Do they fall into categories?
Yeah. So the survey wasn't a scientific survey in that we weren't seeking to sort of validate certain data points. What we're seeking is to collect anecdotal information about where these folks, who are the people remote working in Maine, who are the employers that they work for, and what is their mindset right now. And so we sent the survey out knowing we're in the midst of COVID and we're in the midst of this pandemic and quarantine right now. And the intent is to follow up with that and to keep connected to these folks to track how their mindset starts to shift and see if remote working in Maine is turning into the opportunity we hope it will be for the state, which is a huge attractant and an opportunity to grow our population of talented people. And so the results were very interesting, some top-level takeaways. The first is there's an incredible number of people doing some amazing stuff in Maine that were remote working here even before COVID. And so there is this hidden population that, you know, anecdotally, I think everybody probably knows one or two people that managed to get a remote work job and find the way life should be here in Maine. But we found hundreds of people that work for multinational corporations, the likes of Google, Zillow, IBM, GitHub, EY. I mean, these are, you know, multinational corporations that had a significant presence. There are over 100 IBMers that live and work in Maine full time for IBM that were doing that before COVID. And so what we learned through the survey is that not only is this an opportunity for Maine now and this year, but in fact, there's a huge opportunity to shine a light on the existing population of people that are already remote working in Maine. And if it's a lot easier to build something, to grow something that's already sizable. In other words, we're not starting from scratch here. We've got an incredible population of talented people that are working and representing some amazing employers. And so our mission, and we would propose all of Maine's mission, can be together. If Maine people can not only recognize but embrace the fact that we've got some incredible people choosing the quality of life we have here and doing work that is meaningful all around the world, that's a huge opportunity for our economy, and it's a huge opportunity for our communities to attract the kind of diverse workforce that Maine needs to sustain itself going forward, and to attract people to places in the state that have historically struggled, rural Maine, northern Maine. You know, instead of attracting an employer that will then bring jobs, we can skip that process and get right to attract people because they're going to bring a job with them. So rural Maine and northern Maine in particular has never had a better time to attract the talent they need for long-term economic prosperity.
Luke Thomas, bringing you into the conversation, can you describe what your company Friday does in relation to remote work?
Yeah, sure. So a little bit about me. I've been working remotely really in some capacity since 2013. And no matter where I worked, at these remote companies, I always ran into the same issue, and it really boiled down to this feeling of being disconnected. You know, when you're in the office, there's just so many easy ways to stay connected, whether it's a water cooler conversation, grabbing lunch with a coworker, or something else. When you go remote, you just have fewer data points. You don't know your team as well. You have very little visibility into what people are working on. So what Friday does is we've built software to help you automate kind of communication habits at work, so the information flows up, down, and across the company on kind of a predictable and repeatable basis. And so what we end up doing is helping teams and organizations feel connected even when they're apart. And so that's how Friday works.
As an employer, do you encourage your own staff to work remotely?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We're a distributed company, and we intend to be in the foreseeable future as well.
All right. Andrew Butcher, how accommodating is Maine to people who want to work remotely? I'm going to guess it's a tale of depends on where you are.
Yeah, Jennifer, that absolutely is. Thanks again for having me on today. There's a couple important pieces of context. I mean, remote work in some ways allows us to circumvent some of the traditional economic development challenges that, you know, a place like Maine might face. But it also creates a whole new host of challenges. And, you know, recently Mainers, about 75% of the 300,000 voters who voted in the July primary, approved overwhelmingly a public bond of $15 million to invest in broadband infrastructure because, frankly, our connected infrastructure has been inadequate. Maine has always ranked on sort of the lowest tier of internet service. Most recently, the Connect Maine Authority identified that about 83,000 households in Maine are without internet access. It's pretty difficult to work remotely if you can't connect to the internet at all. And even more so, about 14% of Maine students are without home internet connection. So, you know, the physical connectivity and the infrastructure that's in place in Maine is very much a function of where the existing fiber is, and how communities are well connected. And because, you know, there's not a lot of people in Maine. We have a big place with not a lot of people in it, and it can be very challenging to connect all of the communities in Maine. And I think, fortunately, we're seeing a real shift of the tide in that increasingly, I think in some ways, the pandemic has emphasized how fundamentally dependent we are on a digital economy. Maybe not for everybody, but, you know, so many more of our services are now shifting to a digital platform. More and more companies and organizations, like the Greater Portland Council of Governments, was never a remote organization. We've been remote since March. We likely will be remote through the end of the year and maybe beyond. And that's true for a lot of local government. You know, local government isn't traditionally known for working remote. And so how we are truly investing in connected infrastructure, high-speed internet that is, you know, prepared to accommodate that influx of demand, I think is a really, really critical issue in how we think about investing in companies and that are, allowing their employees to work remotely.
Sure. And let me ask you this. So you mentioned the bond. How much of a dent will that make in the problem, and how long will it take?
Yeah, this is a great question. There's two ways of answering it. The dent is that this is so the bond itself was $15 million, which leverages an additional $30 million of public and private investments from the federal government and from private companies. So it's really a $45 million win for the state, which is huge. It's the first time that that's happened. It's unprecedented. It's still behind the curve as to what other states are doing. That same week, the governor's Economic Recovery Committee also recommended $60 million of allocation of CARES Act funding to invest in broadband infrastructure, as well as an additional $100 million bond for the legislature to consider. That amount still constitutes roughly one third of what would be needed to bring up Maine standards such that there's universal connectivity, which is really what we're talking about. I mean, I think the promises of remote work are extremely high and leverage so many of the natural assets that exist here that Nate was speaking about. But the challenges are, you know, it's not without significant challenges as well. And I think part of our key, both as an advocate for broadband via the Maine Broadband Coalition, as well as, you know, being embedded in local government with the Greater Portland Council of Governments, we have to ensure that every place is livable for everyone, with connectivity and high-speed internet being a really important part of that.
Mm-hmm. Calling in now, Maria Millard Pavak, Senior Policy Analyst with the Governor's Office of Policy Innovation in the Future. Thanks for joining us, Maria. And I understand you yourself came to Maine as a remote worker. Tell us your story.
Yeah, thanks, Jen. And it's great to be on Maine Calling with you all. So my husband and I are both from Maine, and we were living and working in Colorado. But after the birth of our son, we really wanted to be back home in Maine and be near friends and family, and we just wanted to raise our child here. And so I was able to bring my job with me and come back to Maine. And, you know, it didn't take long of working remotely in Maine to start some of the ways that Luke just talked about. And so I was pretty quickly starting to look at ways that I could plug in to a Maine-based job and find something that I could do to really meaningfully contribute to the state.
What has the state been doing to facilitate remote work? Is that one of the goals of your office?
That's been an important conversation for a little while now. And, you know, the state really recognizes the clear promise and potential of attracting remote workers and bringing more talent to Maine, as Nate talked about. And so it's really wonderful to see this increased energy and enthusiasm around it. Attracting remote workers and increasing talent has been a part of the conversation before the pandemic and after the pandemic. Before the pandemic, we talked about it as it relates to the 10-year economic plan. So that plan lays out a goal of bringing 75,000 new workers into the state. And while remote workers don't necessarily meet the immediate needs of Maine employers, having more talent in Maine is really great and really important. And the likelihood that their next job is a Maine-based job is even better if they're already here. And that was the case with me. And since the pandemic, the governor's Economic Recovery Committee has also been talking about these issues and working on how we can better support remote workers. And Andrew really nailed it. Connectivity is a really big piece of that. So the governor's Economic Recovery Committee has put forth a number of recommendations, one looking at marketing Maine to remote workers and talking about the things that Nate's talking about with the quality of life here and celebrating the way of life that Maine affords and the safety that's here. And then some of the bigger proposals are these massive infrastructure projects that are going to be absolutely critical to connect folks who would work remotely all over the state, particularly in rural areas.
Finally, Maria, are there any downsides to drawing out-of-state workers to move here, or not really?
Well, that's something we're looking at, Jennifer. Absolutely, we have to consider all of these things. So part of what my team and I are doing are looking at some of these policies in other states. So, for example, Vermont has a $10,000 incentive for people who want to relocate to Vermont. And so we're starting to explore how some of these policies are playing out. Are they, and some of these incentives, are they causing the right outcome? Are there some unintended consequences? What is it doing to housing and the availability of affordable housing, which is already an issue in Maine? So these are all things that we're continuing to explore, especially as the pandemic is just changing the game.
Well, thanks for calling in so much. That's Maria Millard-Pavec with the Governor's Office of Policy, Innovation, and the Future. Nate, I think a lot of people are uncomfortable with the idea of trying to bring something like 75,000 more people to Maine from out of state.
Yeah.
I'm sure you get some pushback. Give us the argument. Why?
Certainly. So let's just start by clarifying that number. And the number is not 75,000 more people. It's 75,000 more people in the workforce. So what that really means is we don't necessarily need to bring 75,000 brand new people. What we need to do is a combination of things that include retaining a higher percentage of young people who graduate from high school and college in Maine. We need to make sure that they know of the opportunities that exist should they choose to stay in the state. It also means providing adults who have the opportunity to either continue working or to go back to work if they choose to do so from retirement, and or who have lost their job and need help to be retrained or to be retooled as an individual to go back to work in a different environment or a different sector. All of those things are going to be important to achieving that 75,000 more people in the workforce number. So a portion of that is absolutely attracting people here. But attraction is a couple, there are two components to that. There's A, brand new people that are not here right now, but there's also B, retaining people who are here and may not have the opportunity to stay. So for example, it's a lot harder to attract somebody here than it is to convince somebody to stay if they feel fulfilled in their career and fulfilled in life. And so that's why there's a cultural component to our work, which is to shine a light on a lot of good stuff going on in Maine. Because frankly, we are pretty darn lucky in the great state, the great vacation land that we live in, compared to a lot of places around the world. And so what the simplest thing we do at Live and Work in Maine is to highlight really good stuff going on at employers, at the individual level, and now our newfound focus on remote work. Just highlight the fact that there's a lot of successful people doing that already. And so we're not about we don't need to find economic success or even economic sustainability. We as a state do not need to change ourselves. All we need to do is to tell our story. That is our story today. And if we tell that story better, because quite frankly, we haven't really told it at all from a marketing standpoint over the last few decades. If we tell that story as we are today, then there'll be plenty of people worldwide, a diverse number of people worldwide, that will choose to be here in Maine, whether it is to stay in Maine or whether it is to relocate here. And let's remember that, we're not, again, it's not 75,000 new people to the state. It's 75,000 people added to the workforce. And
all
so
right.
The number of people that we actually need to attract is probably closer to 10,000. And to put that in perspective, that's 1/6 of the Portland Peninsula. So we're not talking about a lot of people, especially when you look at statewide across from Aroostook County all the way down to York.
We're talking about people moving to Maine, working here, living here, staying here after the pandemic. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, more of your comments and questions. This is Maine Calling.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Marshall Communications. With its new ebook, 10 Tips for How Your Small Business Can Beat COVID-19 with Empathy and Action, marshallpr.com. Jill McGowan, committed to making premium women's apparel since 1994, Exchange Street in Portland and at jillmcgowan.com. And Bernstein Scher, a law firm that counsels clients through contracts and courtrooms and the business challenges outside them, BernsteinSure.com.
Meatpacking plants have been hit hard by the coronavirus. Many meatpackers are immigrants and refugees and reluctant to speak out about unsafe conditions. So their adult children are taking on the cause.
Standing up for our parents is our responsibility.
I'm Mary Louise Kelly. The fight to protect essential workers in meatpacking plants this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
And that's coming up later today at 4 o'clock here on Maine Public Radio. Summertime is often the time when drivers set their sights on a new set of wheels. If that's you, and if you choose to donate your used vehicle to the Maine Public Car Donation Program, you'll also receive the Lee Auto Mall's All Cars Considered $500 Thank You Reward, which you can apply towards the purchase of any vehicle at any Lee Auto Mall's location through this October. For more information, please visit mainepublic.org and click on Support or Events.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, remote workers choosing to stay in Maine and what that means for the state. Joining me, Luke Thomas is founder of the company Friday, which is focused on remote workers. Andrew Butcher is director of innovation and resilience with the Greater Portland Council of Government. And Nate Wilds is executive director of Live and Work in Maine. We invite you to be part of the conversation. Email talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Calling in now is Adam Berea, who is legal director at Google and recently moved here from California. Adam, thanks for joining us. You moved not long ago. Tell us what prompted you to move to Maine and how it's working out for you.
Yeah. Hi, Jennifer, and thanks for having me on the show. You know, we were living out in California. I work at Google. My office is actually in San Francisco. Things started to get a little bit dicey as far as all of the shelter-in-place orders starting, I want to say, in the middle of March. My wife and I have been coming to Maine pretty much forever. She grew up here. I've been coming to Rangeley with her since the mid-90s. We usually spend part of every year here, have a house here. And when we realized what it was going to mean for the well-being of our kids to be in isolation in an urban area versus what it could mean for our kids to be in isolation in a place like the Rangeley Lakes region, it was pretty simple. And we moseyed out here, I want to say, in the beginning of April.
Google was among the first corporations to extend work from home until summer of 2021. What has been the response in the company, and do you think the change will have lasting effects?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say. I mean, you know, the company is very and always has been conscious of making sure that the work environment and the work culture is healthy. I think this is probably the first time that a public health crisis has really caused us to sort of reexamine how it is that, you know, our office culture works. You know, a lot of emphasis was placed on, you know, good meals and you know, collaborating, not only during the workday, but in cafeterias and in common spaces. And obviously, there's all sorts of limitations on that. So I think generally speaking, you know, most folks at the company are very much understanding of what's going on. But practically speaking, for a lot of us, particularly the ones who were in urban areas, you know, being at home, not only having a full work day there, but also having a full school day for your kids and, you know, full work day for your spouse has been pretty difficult. And since we've been out here, we actually, you know, are feeling a little bit of survivor's guilt because it's been just a spectacular year for us.
Well, thank you so much for calling in and sharing your story. That's Adam Berea, who is legal director at Google and a recent transplant to Maine. I want to ask you, Andrew, are there some unintended consequences when we have so many people working remotely here in Maine?
Yeah, thanks, Jennifer. The you know, the prospect of remote work kind of presents a challenging dynamic for me to confront, really, as an advocate for connected infrastructure and the digital economy, which enables remote work, but also as a community development and placemaking advocate. And, you know, I think the challenges, there's a lot of benefits, and I think the benefits ultimately far outweigh the challenges. But it's important to bear in mind that, you know, remote work works if you can work remotely, if you have a job that can do that. And many, many people in Maine and many industries and predominantly low income people in Maine don't work in jobs that accommodate remote work And that presents a whole host of challenges, not to mention the fact that we've spoken a little bit about that there are many parts of the state that are just still woefully disconnected. I'm so glad to hear Adam in the Rangeley area has adequate connectivity to be able to work. That those types of rural areas are the areas that often struggle the most with reliable, affordable connectivity. Additionally, we as a culture and as a state are still navigating the shift in, land use planning that embraces contemporary zoning, climate mitigation, kind of boring but important stuff. And so this is a real paradigm shift in where people are located and how they relate to the places where they are located. And then, it behooves all of us to think about how a shift to increase, to a much larger focus on remote and digital work exacerbates existing social and economic divides and disparities that predominantly affect low-income and minority populations. Again, if you don't have great digital literacy already or digital access, the challenges can be that much more significant. If you it's so great to hear what Friday is doing, because I think younger workers do have a challenge in integrating into corporate culture if it is wholly remote. And so, those represent a series of the challenges that I think, we need to be mindful about. And, additionally, as an economic development advocate, we've got a lot of great companies here in Maine that have long used Maine as a recruiting asset. If that doesn't matter anymore, then it sort of levels the playing field, which fundamentally does shift the reliance on recruitment just from the company and the promotion of place to a collective promotion of place and the assets of this place, which is, again, why Live Work Maine and the campaigns that they have launched are so critical in getting everyone sort of on the same page as to, the benefits and the opportunities of locating and doing your work remotely in Maine.
Sure. And Luke, speaking of the unintended consequences, I was talking to a friend recently, and he said one of the big problems of this shift from working from home will be people who are new to the workforce.
Yeah. I mean, there's certainly, I would argue that one of the most difficult spots in the employee life cycle is absolutely onboarding when remote. And that's something that a lot of companies and organizations are going through right now. And, if you think about the average onboarding experience, there's so much that's learned through kind of osmosis. You kind of learn how the company and how the team and how the business operates just by observation and trial and error. And so it certainly will require organizations to be very thoughtful about how they kind of bring on new employees and how they kind of convey the standard operating procedures, the cultural artifacts, and other kind of ways that the team or the organization operates. I think from my perspective, the thing that I hear over and over again is the social isolation, which has only been exacerbated with, COVID and everybody really needing to stay at home a lot more than normal. And I think from my perspective, the way I think about it is that, for a lot of people, if we map out how we spend our time and how we communicate, a lot of it is done over the internet. And the office for many people was kind of this last kind of stand or this last bastion of in real life interaction. And when that is taken away, people really can feel disconnected. And what I can tell you based on my personal experience, as well as, hanging out with a lot of other remote workers, is that they would try to find ways to meet other people who are in a similar boat, right? And so specifically before COVID really hit here in the U.S., we had this kind of remote worker meetup in Portland and had, 60, 70 people turn out. And it was largely because they all wanted to meet other people who do the similar thing. And it's, you could work right down the street from someone and have no idea that they were also a remote worker as well. So I think from my perspective, an area I spend a lot of time thinking about is how do you kind of help, how do you help people stay connected both inside the company, but also how can you connect them with their local community? Because that's a real point of opportunity. Because if people aren't commuting, well, then maybe they can get more involved in their community and end up meeting their neighbors and, engaging in some real kind of civic interaction. I think that's, sure, there's a downside, but there's always silver linings that can be really explored if you approach things with an open mind.
Sure. Trying to get some listener questions here. Here's an email from Jeffrey. I'm a remote worker, originally from Connecticut. We bought a house in Cushing on the river. Love the place. We were looking at 3 more years of work in Connecticut, then retirement to Maine. But when they sent us all home, we moved up here. I have a question. My business used to be in Connecticut. They sent us home to work. Most people are still in Connecticut, but since mid-March, I've been working out of Maine. I asked my employer to switch my work state, as I now live and work out of Maine, but they haven't done that, saying my work location is still Connecticut. As such, I'm still paying Connecticut state tax and not Maine tax. What should I be doing? Do I have to pay Maine tax? How do I make this all work? Nate, are you hearing similar questions?
Yeah, we do get questions like that not too infrequently. I am thankfully not in the tax business, which is one thing I'm very appreciative of these days. And we do not do work on, so we're not a state agency. So I can't answer the question absolutely. What I can say is that this is an issue that a lot of states are struggling with, because, you know, certainly this is an opportunity for Maine to attract new people here and to retain the people that are already remote working. But certainly every state has seen a shift, if not an influx, a shift, whether it's out from New York City or in, like we're experiencing in Maine, of where people are working and who they're working for. And so this is the tax and the legal and the framework of that is certainly complicated, and it happened really fast, especially compared to the pace at which many governments are used to working. So this will absolutely be a challenge for our elected officials to handle and tackle. And the best thing you can do, and what we're advocating anybody with a question to do, is to write it down and to send it off to their local and state elected officials. You know, we're all in this together. We certainly can't expect our elected officials to have a magic answer for every challenge that pops up right now. But they are the ones that need to act on a lot of these policies. And so the more information, the more anecdotes, and the more information we can provide, again, this is happening really fast. So the more honesty and the more we can document, I think the better off we'll be as a state, because we do have a history of seizing on opportunities like this and working together between, you know, government and employers and nonprofits and communities to capitalize and to fix stuff and to make it work. As Maine goes, so goes the nation. You know, Deer Ago is in our headline. So
sure.
If we can work together and be honest about what's going on, I think we're good off.
Andrew, do you have a thought on this?
Yeah, I think Nate spoke to it pretty well. I would just emphasize that, the writer emphasizes sort of an excellent test case that, you know, I encourage them to really continue to explore. I mean, it's both a function of delayed policies on their company front and delayed policy on the local government front. But this is a huge, huge opportunity because, you know, certainly as we as a state encourage more people to come here, as we capture the mm-hmm. opportunity of people who spend part of their time here, this is a huge tax-based opportunity, which, you know, as everybody knows, is a critical function for Maine. So I would just encourage the caller to tease that out and be a real test case.
Joining us now, Laura Becker, a sales and marketing consultant from New York who moved to Portland last year. Thanks for calling in, Laura.
Hey, thanks.
I understand you moved here a year ago, and since deciding to stay in Maine, you have a newborn baby at home. Congratulations.
I do. Thank you very much. Yes.
So you're not one of the COVID transplants. You came before. What was your decision like?
Yeah, I did. I came here last June, so 2019. After 10 years, my husband and I were in the city and just thinking we wanted a change of pace, you know, a kind of better quality of life. And we actually decided, since we were both remote, that we could try out a few different locations that we were thinking about. So Airbnb helped with that a lot. We lived in Boulder for 3 months. We considered Seattle, actually. And we stayed in Maine and Portland for about 3 months in the winter and loved it, and ultimately made our choice pretty easy and then moved here full time last June. And we've been happy ever since, bought a house and just moved in this March right before everything happened and then had a baby.
Oh, my goodness. Well, congratulations. Have there been any downsides, or are you happy with your decision?
Yeah, we're very happy. I mean, we really have always loved Maine. We had friends that we, you know, would visit occasionally for some little vacations and weekend getaways. But as consultants, you know, we needed a place where we could travel to our clients. So, yes, the Portland Jetport, you know, it might be a small airport, but I was going to New York all the time, and it was very, very easy to get to New York, Chicago, D.C. So those locations were so easy. And then when I would need to get to the West Coast, I would just go out of Boston, which wasn't hard at all. So location couldn't have been better. It was a quick drive to New York if we needed to get back. That's where our family was based anyway. I mean, really, no complaints. And, you know, affordability. We wanted a house. We definitely were priced out of what we wanted in New York City or Brooklyn where we were living, and was very happy with the fact that we were able to buy something that could accommodate our family with a little backyard and, you know, outdoor space, and that's something we would never have gotten anywhere in the city. So no complaints thus far.
Well, Laura, thanks for calling in and sharing your story. Laura Becker, a sales and marketing consultant who moved from New York to Maine last summer. We are going to take another quick break. When we come back, more of your questions and comments. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Maine Community Foundation, working with donors to expedite funding to nonprofits in this unprecedented time. Learn more at mainecf.org. Maine Audubon, presenting their native plants sale where you can order online and pick up in Falmouth. MaineAudubon.org. And Bristol Seafood's My Fish Dish, lemon and herb butter North Atlantic scallops, and three other varieties, found in the freezer at your local Hannaford.
The Maine Friendship House is shipped from Jonesport to the American Germany colony in Jaffa, Israel on August 11, 1866. The colony was founded in the 19th century by the American Protestant Christian Restorationism movement led by George J. Adams and Abraham Mackenzie. Along with a group of colonists from Maine, the two leaders settled in Jaffa and built their community with prefabricated materials from Maine. The house was saved from demolition by Gene and Reed Holmes of Jonesport in 2002, and a 2004 restoration of the property was the first offshore building to win a Maine Preservation Award.
On This Day in Maine's History was created in partnership with the Maine Historical Society and made possible through the generous support of Marshall Communications. Happy birthday, Maine! The Maine CDC briefing on the coronavirus is on a twice-a-week schedule, on Tuesdays and Thursdays. On these 2 days, it will normally happen at 2 o'clock each weekday afternoon. Maine Public Radio, Maine Public Television, MainePublic.org, and the Maine Public Facebook page will all bring it to you live. In addition, the briefings are archived at MainePublic.org for later on-demand viewing or listening. Just choose the television drop-down. Again, Maine's CDC briefing with Dr. Shaw and others is normally scheduled for Tuesday and Thursdays each week and carried here on Maine Public Radio as well as Maine Public Television, MainePublic.org, and the Maine Public Facebook page.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. We're discussing the phenomenon of people moving to Maine and working remotely. My guest, Andrew Butcher, with the Maine Broadband Coalition and the Greater Portland Council of Governments, Nate Wilds with Live and Work in Maine, and Luke Thomas with the company called Friday. If you'd like to join our conversation, 1-800-399-3566. I'm going to go to Grayson calling from Portland. Hi, Grayson. Go ahead.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I think it's tremendously exciting that we're having a lot of people move here. There are a lot of communities in Maine that can really benefit from, you know, new energy and working people. I also think it really highlights and exacerbates in some sense the issue of the affordable housing crunch and the homelessness crisis in Portland and around the state. You know, Maine is already among the least affordable states in which to rent. So I think this really points to the need to kind of regulate short-term rentals, also build more affordable housing, get people off the streets. I know this has been touched on, but you know, there really is a crisis here in a housing crunch. So, you know, it's
sure,
exciting,
Grayson,
but there's definitely need.
And you have a question I think a lot of people have. This note, we've done Maine Calling programs about the affordable housing crunch, as you call it. And, you know, it's interesting because we just heard from Laura, who's so excited to be able to afford a home in Portland because compared to New York City prices, it's a bargain here. But for people who have not lived somewhere like that and have always worked in Maine, the housing costs are going up. Calling in now, Paul Peck, a real estate developer and attorney and past president of the Maine Real Estate and Development Association. Thanks for calling in, Paul. And I'll start with that. What are we seeing in the market overall? Is this influx of people moving here from places that are more expensive affecting the real estate market?
Hi, Jennifer. Yeah, I think that's true. What I'm hearing and what we see is that people from New York, Boston, D.C., Texas, California, those are the primary states that I hear about from my real estate broker friends in the community. They're moving here. They have resources to make all cash offers, which makes it difficult for others who are buying homes to compete. So there's definitely something happening. It seems, though, that the percentage of out-of-state buyers may not be any more than it has ever been. From what we hear is that, you know, 25 to 30% of the buyers are from out-of-state, and that hasn't really changed in the last several years. There's been a continuing trend of out-of-state people moving to Maine because we have a lot to offer our quality of life, and we all know why it's great here, and other people are finding that. And I think the pandemic is just accelerating that to some degree. Also, the second home market, not just primary homes. Second home market has exploded also. And people who are buying second homes, you know, used to use them in the winter for a few months or in the summer for a few months, but now they're, what we hear is they're staying longer. Maybe they're half homes or more, which is probably good in the long run. We have more people coming and spending money here, but yeah, it's definitely had an impact on real estate values and competition for homes.
Is this surge happening all over the state, or is it only in places like Portland and then sort of the vacation places, the Rangeley Lakes, Bethel, the coastal towns? Or are you seeing pockets that you may not have expected if you thought about this not too deeply?
I think the primary impact is all those places you just mentioned, but there are statewide implications. It's great that you have somebody from the Broadband Coalition on today, because that was something I was going to mention. It was great that we passed the bond not that long ago to expand broadband, and people can work from anywhere. But yeah, there's people from all over moving in. I have a friend who works for Alphabet and Google in California. They can work now from home for at least another year, and she's moving here and hopes that they continue that work from home after a year. But she's taking the chance and moving here, and that's what we're seeing.
Do you believe this is going to last beyond the pandemic? The word that's being used in the national media is the urban flight. Do you think we're seeing a shift in our country as more and more people move from the big cities to places like Maine, or do you think this is short term?
I think it's definitely a shift from what things that I've read is that even these big companies, even when the pandemic's over, whenever that's going to be, they're still going to be they're going to allow a percentage of people to work from home, maybe a third. They're going to allow maybe a third to do half and half, work from home a couple of days, work in the office a couple of days, and then a third or so will work in the office. So I think it's going to be a permanent trend. And it's not anything new, really. That's been it's just exacerbating and accelerating, I guess is a better word, what's been happening over the last few years. And I think it's also going to impact what we build here in Maine, how we accommodate for fears of closeness, and how we can improve our air circulation and our air filtration and our surfaces. There's going to be interesting things changing in how we construct our buildings, whether they're commercial or residential.
Well, thank you so much for calling in. That's Paul Peck, an attorney and real estate developer and board member of the Maine Real Estate and Development Association. Grayson, thank you so much for your question. We have many other questions like Grayson's coming in. We're going to move now to Justin, who's calling from Brunswick. Hi, Justin. Go ahead.
Hey, thank you, Jennifer. I appreciate you having the panel on today and this entire discussion. Thanks to all three of you who have joined in. As a born and raised Midcoast Mainer, I was ecstatic to be moving back home after a tour of service with the United States Coast Guard and completing higher education goals. But I unfortunately found it, you know, remarkably difficult, though, to land real meaningful work in the kinds of fields I was pursuing, despite having passed up, you know, ample job opportunities in other states and bringing a fairly strong set of skills and personal assets to the table. Or so I thought. And I'm not sure what percentage of the inflow of returning or first-time Mainers share that context, but I do know and have to believe that the cohort of veterans moving in is large and growing. And I'm curious if anyone on the panel, maybe Mr. Wilds or Mr. Butcher in particular, have any insight into opportunities or services directed specifically to veterans.
Yeah, Justin, I am so glad you called. Maine has a disproportionately large number of people serving in the military, and thank you for your service. And as those people come back, whether they grew up in Maine like Justin, Nate, or maybe they have been stationed here in the distant past at Brunswick Naval Air Station, Nate, Justin sounds like the exact kind of person you are hoping to bring back to Maine for good.
Yeah, he's absolutely right. And yes, if we could clone Justin a lot, then that would be certainly beneficial for all of Maine. We thank you, Justin, for your service, and glad you ended up in Maine. And it sounds like you did find meaningful work, which is excellent. The short answer to your question is yes. Maine has an incredible set of programs, incentives, and support networks for veterans who are transitioning, for active duty folks who are transitioning out of the military, as well as for veterans who are interested after they've transitioned out and interested in finding meaningful work for the rest of their career. Maine is really distinct in the nation. We have a phenomenal partnership with a nonprofit called Boots to Roots. That's Boots with the number two, Roots. Boots to Roots is a nonprofit organization based in Portland. It's one of a kind in the nation, and they work exclusively with active duty military personnel to help them transition. The added bonus of working and attracting veterans to Maine is that the military pays for active duty military personnel to relocate anywhere once. So basically, when you're done with your tour of service, they will pay for you to go anywhere you want to go. And so there's an opportunity to attract. There are hundreds of thousands of military personnel who transition out each year. So Maine only needs to attract a very small percentage of them to solve our workforce needs. And certainly veterans represent an incredible talent pool that Maine employers are increasingly conscious of.
Sure, so but Nate, Justin's saying it's not so easy. He's not finding jobs to fit his training.
That's right. And so what we're hearing and seeing are two examples of where that disconnect happens. The first is that the employer community in Maine has historically not always been great at connecting with and sometimes literally speaking the language and using the vocabulary necessary to onboard and to attract that military talent. And so Boots to Roots and other organizations have done a lot of work, and this is very recent work, right? In the last few years alone, to coach and to work with Maine employers to help them adapt their internal processes so that when a really talented person from the military applies for a job, sometimes it's as practical as they use a word that means the same thing. It's just a word the employer doesn't recognize because the lingo in the military is different than the lingo in the civilian world. And what a darn shame to have a really talented person not even get an interview because the employer doesn't understand the word on the resume, even though that person is way overqualified for the position or appropriately qualified for the position. And so the work being done now is to help Maine employers to better receive and to better serve that population. But it's also working in the middle to help. So Boots to Roots does this groundwork of working with individuals to, before they even apply for a job, translate that resume and learn the language, literally, of how to communicate with Maine employers. We've got a bunch of success stories up on our site of people who have made that successful transition. So this is certainly an early trend, but there's great success so far. And so we're very optimistic that in the next year or two, we're going to see a big boon of military personnel that are choosing to relocate.
Great. Luke, quickly.
Yeah, just to weigh in, from my perspective, I know there's some organizations, and clearly it depends on what line of work you're pursuing, but I know of some like software companies in particular, HubSpot, for example, has a veterans program. I think that honestly, this is very unfortunate, but I think they're a rare exception to the rule. I don't know of very many organizations that have a huge focus, which I think is just super unfortunate. One other quick note is why I'm very bullish on remote work in particular is because I grew up in the middle of nowhere in Maine, and I would love to be able to work on interesting work no matter where I am. And I think that's largely true for a lot of people that I talk to who are thinking about moving. If they move, they're concerned that there won't be kind of enough jobs or enough interesting jobs for them in case that one goes sour. So I think from the Maine perspective, I think we really need to be thinking about how we can make Maine a very friendly place to grow and run a business. Because when you get that cluster and that density, then people start really understanding that they have fallbacks if that job doesn't work out the way they hoped.
Justin, thank you for your question. I'm going to quickly do, we have so many emails and tweets and Facebook posts coming in. I'll try to get to a couple of these. Kevin says, we are in the midst of a sea change in the Eastport area real estate market. Properties here are selling at a pace nobody in the local real estate sector has ever seen happen here. As a realtor, one of the most frequent questions I get from prospective buyers is about the availability of internet access for working remotely. With the changes brought on by COVID-19, many more people are looking for broadband. Many are pleasantly surprised with the degree of access to needed broadband here in rural Down East. We are seeing younger people and families with children exploring and buying properties in a part of Maine where that is a very welcome development. I know, Nate, that's one of the points that you wanted to make, is that you might be surprised. Don't assume that the broadband is bad. Poke in, put a address into a database and find out or check it out, because just from one side of a street to another, you might be surprised. But I want to end with this. This is a tweet. How can we help get more Mainers better remote jobs that can raise their income by 50 to 100%? This is a huge opportunity. And Andrew Butcher, I'm going to throw that to you, because that is the mismatch here, isn't it? That people who have lived and worked in Maine already for 10, 20, 30 years are not making the kind of salaries that people who are coming from other states and working remotely are.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. And, you know, to that tweet's question, you know, fundamentally, step one, everybody needs access to be connected to each other, no exceptions. And that's a big part of what the Broadband Coalition is working towards. You know, I get an amazing opportunity in my role at GPCOG to dream big and to think about systemic challenges like affordable housing. And, you know, I think the reality of it is that we have an opportunity here to be creative in translating our liabilities into assets. And I encourage folks, if they're interested in finding out more information about next steps with broadband and how opportunities are opening up and what the frontiers of opportunity in digital infrastructure are, to join a webinar today at 4:30 at mainebroadbandcoalition.org. There's information for folks if they're interested in hearing more about that issue.
All right. And I'm going to pass it back to you, Luke. In the end, do you believe in the long run, and you just have a few seconds here, that this will end up bringing up the salaries that people in Maine make?
I think from my perspective, it has the potential. I think there's two tracks. One, you need to be really, really good at what you do, especially in a kind of niche area of focus. Or, quite frankly, I moved out of Maine the minute I graduated college. I moved to Boston for a few years, and then I moved back. That's an alternative route. And I know it's not a popular one, but it's one method that appears to be working.
Well, thank you to all of you for joining us today. And I'm so sorry to all the questions we were not able to get to. We'll have to return to this topic. My guest, Luke Thomas, founder of the company Friday, which is focused on remote workers. Andrew Butcher with the Maine Broadband Coalition, and also director of innovation and resilience with the Greater Portland Council of Governments. And Nate Wilds, executive director of Live and Work in Maine. Lucy Suchek ran the board today. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. The CDC briefing is next. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Public Radio.